Welcome to the second of 13 podcasts based on our new book, Business Communication and Rhetorical Situations, and that's available from Broadview Press, which is broadview.com. Each of these podcasts will give an overview of the chapter it focuses on, as well as some background of the cases or rhetorical situations that provide a narrative structure to the chapter. I will provide ideas for instructors about how to teach from the chapters and what parts of the chapter I stress when I teach from it. Today's chapter is Chapter 2, Argument and Professional Communication. There's really three basics to argument, and they are credibility, which is the sense of trust that you build in your audience through the way you present your document. Logic, the reasons and reasonableness that you convey through what you say in your document. And a third is emotion, the passion or concern you have for your topic. The way we start this chapter is with a case or a rhetorical situation that's based on a real letter that was sent to someone we know. And this was a new investment advisor seeking new clients. And so we looked at this letter and, well, the letter was brought to our attention because the person who received it was offended by it. And so we thought, all right, here's a situation where we can take a look at what about this letter did that person find offensive, and how could it be rewritten to make it more persuasive as a argument for engaging this person, or at least meeting with them. In the chapter, we talk about ways in which you can build credibility or trust. The key one, or one of the key ones anyways, is show your knowledge of the subject. So unless you've demonstrated that you really know what you're talking about, you're not going to get listened to. A second one is to describe opposing viewpoints fairly. If you're just taking off on the opposite point of view and not really giving it, not describing it fairly, someone's going to sense that, or if they happen to know more about it, they'll think, well, you're not really describing that seriously. So I don't need to pay attention to what you're saying. A third strategy for building trust is to show how you share common ideas with your readers. We talk about the concept of identification, which comes from the rhetorician Kenneth Burke, which identification is the sense that your readers have moved beyond merely agreeing with you to joining your social group. So they sense that you're on their side, that you're part of their group, and you're trying to help them. And that's a tricky concept, but there's ways in which you can do this. And one is to use the word we, that aligns the writer and the reader together. You can list shared beliefs and values. You can show how your interests are aligned. You're both trying to achieve the same thing. And you can also show how you both belong to a privileged group. So the first third of the chapter is really talking about how can you as a writer develop credibility with your readers. So as an instructor, when you're looking at this, what you're asking students to do is just take that letter that Dan Cooper has written and revise it so that it shows it builds a lot more credibility with its readership. When people think about argument, the first thing they think about is what I'm going to talk about second, which is logic. So argument is about credibility first. It also includes emotion, but logic is what we tend to think about. So logic is defined as a series of related claims and supporting evidence that present your ideas on the subject. Readers must find your claims and evidence to be logical and interesting if they're going to finish reading your argument. So that's the emotional part, the interesting part. They must also be convinced that you know your topic well, and that's your credibility. But you need all three things. Now, the starting point for all arguments, as it were, or persuasive situations, is that you have to have areas that you share or ideas and values that you share at some point. Now, of course, because you have disagreeing points of view on something or how to proceed or whatever, disparate views, but you have to have a sense or a shared idea that you do need to proceed or whatever. So every time you have a persuasive situation, you have to have some shared area to begin from. So one of your first jobs as a writer is to figure out where is that shared area. So arguments begin with a claim. And a claim is a statement that you believe to be true. The second thing an argument has, then, is reasons. So reasons that accompany your statement or claim that explain why you think it's true. and they can be all kinds of things, and we'll get to that in a minute. So the third thing then about your reasons is you have to back them up with evidence. So narratives, which are stories, facts, which you get from other places, other documents, statistics, experts, all of these are different kinds of evidence you can use or provide that back up the reason that you're giving for something that you think should happen. In the book, we give an example drawn from the Canadian Cancer Society website, and you can see in this example the ways in which they're giving different kinds of evidence in order to make their point that they believe that you should eat differently in order to prevent cancer. So that's, if you happen to look at that or look at pretty much any American Cancer Society, any of them, where they're trying to explain how, for example, eating is related to bad health outcomes. And they'll give all kinds of evidence there. And you'll see it as statistics. You can see it as stories from people, from doctors even. But those are the ways, those are great examples or places where you can see this kind of argument in action. One of the more sophisticated things, one of the more difficult things to sort of figure out about argument has to do with values. So many of these arguments, in the case of the cancer situation or cancer pages, there's a shared value that they are reaching out to. I'm saying a shared value is you want to live longer. We just kind of assume that, but not everybody does necessarily. You could also say, well, I think that it's more important to eat well or eat things that I really like, that are foods that are important to me, than it is to live longer. So those are two values which are in conflict or could be in conflict. And you'll see this on a lot of different places where people are arguing back and forth or not reaching an agreement. Part of it may be because they're not sharing those values that you're assuming that they do. And that's a key thing. In the chapter, the second rhetorical situation has to do with an attempt to expand, or a decision that needs to be made as to whether to expand a senior's home in different ways. And in looking at that, you can see in which the ways the initial report has not provided good evidence or not provided a good argument. And so what we ask students to do is to read the case and think about ways in which that argument could be strengthened. And that's the subject of the case in that part of the chapter. So we've talked about credibility, we've talked about logic, and now the third aspect of a good argument, we're talking about emotional appeals, or ways in which you can really show that you think you can get somebody excited about doing something or really wanting to do it. In this third part of the chapter, we use a case. Again, I know that people sometimes think these things just aren't real, but it is. It's from a resort, a small resort, and they had documents that they had written for the guests about how the resort was run. And one of the documents touches on people taking their clothes off in the hot tub, which they didn't want them to do. So that's not a made-up thing. And so they had to write rules around that. And in the case of rules around a resort like that, you can have the logic about why somebody shouldn't do that. But you really have to get them to emotionally think, to get them emotionally on side and say, no, okay, I agree, I shouldn't do that, so I won't do it. That's the big challenge here. So there's three ways in which you can build an emotional appeal or specific things you can do. One is to be aware of the conscious word choice that you're making, because many of the words that you choose are freighted with emotion and they are slanted with emotion. So pick the one that goes off in the direction you want. The second strategy is to use concrete examples and vivid details, because these get people excited. They get them to imagine the situation, and then through that imagining, they then come to an agreement. And the third thing is to use appropriate analogies or metaphors. So this is, you can say, this situation is like some other situation that I know you're familiar with. And by making that connection, the emotion you have with the other situation, you can import into this one. So if you're looking at the textbook, and in it you'll see some of the various examples we give from. One is the iVegan.ca, and another one is from the Canadian Automobile Association, where they're trying to get people on side, and the way they're doing this is very a really strong emotional appeal to get them, to persuade them to act in the ways that they want them to act. So that concludes this overview of Chapter 2 of Business Communication, Rhetorical Situations, which is available from broadview.com.